Yes, technicians of Spaceship Earth, welcome to Hawk Binge, the Hawkwind podcast, a journey through the astral plane that is the Hawkwind discography, one album at a time, in the company of me, Andy, a long-term Hawkwind appreciator in the south coast of England, and Matt in the United States, who has never heard these albums before. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Hey, hi from wintry Portland in Oregon, where I'm currently hiding out in a little cabin, trying to escape these sub-zero temperatures which are assaulting me, and it is the ideal time to sit down with some records I've never heard before. So this actually worked out pretty well when you said, let's do this, Andy.
Excellent. That's good. Well, this is a good time to be holed up in a bunker, I would suggest. So we've been playing this album like non-stop for several weeks now in preparation for this.
Several.
But yes, indeed. But we've also been playing a bunch of other stuff around it. Everyone needs a palate cleanser from time to time. So, Matt, what's been on the turntable?
Well, Andy, when I'm not checking out 70s music I've never heard of before, I do like to scour the internet for the craziest sounds that I can find. And one of my most recent and beloved discoveries is a genre called dream punk, which is a whole bunch of artists which try to recapture that Vangelis-y feeling of old Blade Runner soundtracks. Every single one of these releases makes you feel like you're wandering through a neon dystopia, which, to be honest, when I put this on my headphones and go dog walking right now, I feel like I am, with everything just being all abandoned and the weather being dark and moody. So it fits the mood really nicely. One of my favourite labels that I've discovered, unfortunately, is shuttering at the very start of 2021. It's a label called Dream Catalog. A lot of their releases are on Spotify, but most of them are on Bandcamp. And right now, they're kind of doing these big collections of tracks and artists for people who just want to grab them while the record label is still currently active. So I'd really recommend anyone who likes that kind of synthy, paddy, dreamy kind of vibe to go and check it out. There's lots of artists on there. One of the most prolific was one called HKE, or Hong Kong Express, who is responsible for maybe 55 albums and EPs during the record label's lifespan. And the one I would recommend right now is a album called Loop Matrix, and my favourite track on that is one called Howl.
Pretty cool. I've also been listening to soundtracky kind of music recently, because I recently rewatched Watchmen TV series, which is epic, absolutely brilliant.
Damn fine show.
Indeed. And the soundtrack, the score for it, is unbelievable. It's Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor. I was never a massive follower of Nine Inch Nails, but this is sensational. I got hold of it on three vinyls. Even the packaging is such beautiful attention to detail. It all places these records in the in this fictional universe of Watchmen, and is absolutely brilliant. So I would definitely recommend to check that out. Anything else, Matt?
Yeah, I wanted to share a surprising discovery that Spotify made me aware of with their digest of 2020 that they always do at the end of every year. I was surprised to find out that I've been listening to a band called High Reaper as much as I had been. I think they were my third most listened to band of this year. They are exactly what they sound like: good, strong riff rock. I'm a big fan of listening to that live, and I think I would listen to these guys as much as I did because I was really missing live music. I tend not to listen to this stuff so much just pre-recorded, because I find that the vocals can be irritating if I'm not actually watching the singer. I find that they can be kind of distracting. However, for some reason, the vocals on High Reaper I absolutely love. So I was listening to, I believe, their second album called Higher Reaper, which is on Heavy Psych Sounds, and the track that I keep coming back to is a track called Apocalypse Hymn, which takes a break from the hardcore riffs and just goes super atmospheric, very reverby, and again, I think captures the same kind of dystopian spirit that I get from the Dream Catalog stuff. So I feel like I'm very much trapped in a theme right now, which still is very much reflective of the time, so I guess that's appropriate.
And also reflective of some of the stuff that you're going to hit with the Hawkwind album, it's got to be said. And something else I've been listening to is, again, in that same zone. So we're obviously connecting here. Back in March, when lockdown was about to hit us, it was pretty apparent that all the gigs were going to be cancelled. I really wanted to find someone to watch for one last time, and I found a band called Insect Arc playing a very low-key gig in Brighton. I'd never heard of them. I looked them up. They do a very kind of lush, heavy, atmospheric doom music. They call it cinematic doom. The main person in the band is Dana Schechter, who was a bass player with Swans for a while. But she plays pretty much everything except the drums and lap steel guitar, which has an amazing sound in this context. Really love them live. They blew me away. Bought a couple of albums. The Vanishing is the most recent one. I would most definitely check that out. So that's a selection of things that we've been listening to around this Hawkwind album. If you listen to the introductory episode, you'll know that we'll be putting a playlist together on Spotify called the Hawkwind Sessions, which will contain some of these tracks alongside the tracks that we pick from the Hawkwind albums that we've been featuring over the first few episodes. So look out for those. And now, Matt, it is time to journey back into 1970.
I'm ready.
So 1970, what was going on in 1970? Well, the Beatles broke up. Ooh. And the Nice broke up as well. But not so many people care about that. Although it does mean that Emerson, Lake and Palmer are on the horizon. Although some people are probably going to hate me already for that one. What albums are being released in 1970? In fact, there's a huge amount of albums released in any given year, but of specific interest to us, this is a killer of a year. Sabbath released their debut album in February and followed up in September with Paranoid. That's a real sign of the times, I think. If you had a successful first album now, I don't think you risk a follow-up for about 3 years. They just tour the hell out of it while you can. But this is an era where albums are being recorded in hours rather than months, basically. So that's a real sign of the times, and that's an amazing way to kick off 1970 in February with the Sabbath album. Hendrix releases a live album, Band of Gypsies. The Who live at Leeds, another killer live album. The last Beatles release, Let It Be. Led Zeppelin are already on their third album, as are King Crimson releasing Lizard. There's Deep Purple in Rock. A couple of strong debuts, Kraftwerk, Genesis, technically their second album, but kind of their first. Miles Davis releases an album in this year, Zappa, Bowie, Velvet Underground, Eric Clapton. This is some time for music, Matt. If you could be a gig-going age in 1970, seeing some of these bands at their creative peak.
It would be absolutely incredible. And I'm trying to figure out, if I was someone who just picked up a guitar and wanted to make a band, whether or not it would be inspiring or deeply concerning, the kind of talent that you would start mixing with when you produce an album.
Yeah, you'd certainly need to do something pretty impactful if you're going to mix it with that little list, I suspect. But that is what Hawkwind do. And into the studio in 1970 go Dave Brock, Nick Turner, they're definitely the movers and shakers of the band, particularly at this stage. Hugh Lloyd Langton, who in future will become a very big player in Hawkwind, but actually leaves after this album, but plays some beautiful guitar solos on here. John Harrison on bass, Terry Ollis on drums, and there is quite a lot of that on this album, which is pretty cool. Mick Slattery, and a man called Dick Mick, Michael Davis, who is less of a musician, perhaps more of a kind of experimental engineer. He's creating something called an audio generator just by playing around with electronics. And it's Dick Mick who comes out with these kind of swooshing background noises that today you'd probably be producing with synthesizers. But it's that backdrop to the more experimental side of Hawkwind that really gives it a kind of Hawkwind signature. So he has a very important part to play without being a particular virtuoso musician on any particular level. The album comes out, didn't really make a dent on the charts, but it's re-released in 1984 as a picture disc. And I have that picture disc. I bought it pretty much at the time. I took it out for the first time in probably about 20 years and had a look at it. And it has faded with time. Haven't we all?
This is the point where I remind you that I was born in 1984.
Yeah, that's not going to survive the edit. except you do the edit, don't you? Damn you!
Yeah, it might come up several times.
Shaking fists at the screen. So that is the environment into which the album is released. It's now time to find out what Matt made of this. Matt, of course, this is not just the first Hawkwind album. It's your first Hawkwind album. Let's find out Matt's hot take.
So I feel like this album put me in a little bit of a difficult position because it is the very first one on a podcast where we're going to talk about all of these albums. And the first album that I end up listening to is one that really took a lot of work to not be angry with it, especially on the first listen. The first track, Hurry on Sundown, when I listened to it, I immediately thought, okay, well, this is what Hawkwind are. They are a reasonably predictable, fairly competent 70s band. Everything seems to be recorded nicely. The vocals are fun. It feels very of the era. Nothing completely surprising. And I was enjoying it for the 5 minutes it lasts. And then it fades into the next track, which completely 180'd me to the point where I had to check that I hadn't accidentally put the album on shuffle or had accidentally clicked over to another album by mistake. Such was the difference. It almost felt like the first time you watch Psycho, when you think it's a completely normal film for 20 minutes and then someone gets knifed in the shower. I thought the same thing. I've been lulled into a false sense of security for 5 minutes, and then suddenly the reason is creeps up on you and just stabs you in the head. And that did not endear itself to me as much as maybe it thought it would, at least on the first listen. I felt like I'd been bait and switched, basically, and that was not something which I was expecting, therefore made me mistrust the album from the sixth minute that I was listening to it. And so from there I was listening, waiting to see what would happen next, and maybe that meant I was then listening for every potential change with a lot more suspicion than I should have done, because it really then curtailed my ability to enjoy it. And it wasn't then probably until I took a minute and listened to it again, knowing that would happen, when I started to really appreciate what was there. I still think for me it's kind of a problematic album. I think it almost suffers from being an album in terms of it being in the format that it is. So I do feel like it's a band fighting against what it has to be in order to exist, which is kind of interesting when you think about it. And whether or not that means that it's pushing the boundaries, or whether it means that this band is just a whole bunch of insane people that don't know how the music industry works, I haven't quite decided yet. It may be a mixture of the two. But I do find that the album on the whole is still a bit of a difficult listen, but has endeared itself to me more than the first listen.
So we're getting into this kind of track by track now. You've had the bait and switch that it's Hurry on Sundown and The Reason Is. And it's interesting, I could see that happening. I wasn't sure how you would take it. I've got a reasonably good idea about how you'll respond to a number of Hawkwind albums, but this one was really unsure of where you would go with it. When I came to this album, it wasn't my first Hawkwind album. I had a bunch of Hawkwind albums that I'd bought from secondhand record shops and record fairs. I definitely already had Sonic Attack, Choose Your Masks, Hall of the Mountain Grill, Warrior on the Edge of Time. So I'd already built up an expectation of what Hawkwind is, and that had a lot of strong science fiction elements to it. So I bought this, put it on, you get Hurry on Sundown, and it was quite jarring for me as a 13 or 14 year old. It wasn't really what I wanted from Hawkwind. It wasn't that I didn't like it, because it's actually, you know, it's a decent song. It's quite a jaunty, busky song. But I didn't really want jaunty, busky from Hawkwind. I wanted dark, dystopian, nightmarish from Hawkwind. And that wasn't it. And then, of course, it comes out of Hurry on Sundown into The Reason Is. And that was almost just too weird and experimental for me at that age. I hadn't been prepared to listen to that. So weirdly, the album at that point, I was very confused by it and put it away, and it didn't really come back out again because my memory of the album was an album I didn't connect with. So really now, this last few weeks we've been listening to it a lot, I've now really found a connection with The Reason Is. I still haven't really with Hurry on Sundown, which is heresy given the number of Hawkwind fans for whom this is something of a cherished item, you know, track one, side one, album one. But I still haven't really connected with Hurry on Sundown. They played it at the 50th anniversary gig last year at the Royal Albert Hall, and it was brilliant. But The Reason is something now that does connect with me. We've seen a lot of bizarre, experimental, weird music, extreme music, bands like Sun, bands that are improvising. But now The Reason Is, I get that, and that starts to work for me. So I kind of come out of Hurry on Sundown, and then it goes into The Reason Is. It is a very jarring transition between the two, but I feel somewhat more at home in The Reason Is. And The Reason Is then has quite a hard segue into Be Yourself.
So Be Yourself is interesting because, again, the first time I listened to it, I wasn't massively predisposed to like it because it wasn't going back to the Hurry on Sundown kind of vibes which had been established at the beginning. I thought the slide out of The Reason Is into Be Yourself was very quick. It just felt like a very quick, just like little crossfade, which isn't my favourite effect. I wish that was a little bit smoother because I felt like we lost any kind of dreamy space vibe, which I thought maybe after I'd been switched up to be The Reason Is, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe this is where we're going, and then it changes again to be yourself, so it feels like, again, it's a third very different iteration of whatever Hawkwind are up to at this point. But this one has some fun in it. The long solos with the effects drift in and out of it, I really like. The shimmers and reverbs add a lot of interest. I do feel like this track starts to redeem itself sonically a little bit more, and actually on repeat listens, it's one that I do like a lot more. It feels, now I've listened to the whole album a lot, where I'm more expecting them to go, and it feels a bit like, compromise isn't the right word, but it starts to take a little bit of the melodic sensibilities from something like Hurry on Sundown, but twists them into something which feels more ownable and something which feels more fresh compared to then what I've just had from The Reason Is, which feels so all over the place that I don't think you could really establish a band out of it. So the first time I listened to Be Yourself, I thought, well, it's not what I was expecting, so I'm going to ignore it. But on re-listens, this is more where I like Hawkwind, and it feels immediately where they're a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I've grown to like Be Yourself. I actually do quite like the way it plays off The Reason Is, and it gets into a nice space. I'm definitely starting to feel more at home with Hawkwind at this point in their journey when you get into Be Yourself, which then goes to Paranoia Part 1.
The fact it was called Paranoia in the same year that Sabbath is around is strange, and I'm sure that there was more parallel thinking than them doing anything untoward, but it was just funny that I immediately think Sabbath whenever I see Paranoid or Paranoia or anything, so the fact that they have not one but two tracks called Paranoia made me think that that was a bit unlucky, maybe from their point of view.
Yeah, no one's getting to play Paranoia Part 1 on Top of the Pops.
My main takeaway from Paranoia is I don't know why it's in two parts. I guess me putting my 70s hat on from a production point of view makes me think that it's probably because they were running out of space on a record, and I'm assuming that a record is what they were going to publish this on most. The fact they have this kind of motor off effect, which is that effect where it sounds like a record spinning down actually on the track, makes me feel like they're trying to have a joke about the fact that the side has come to an end, that your record player has stopped before it's actually stopped. It makes me feel like my supposition would be correct.
Yeah, this to me is all about side length, basically. As we know that LPs, the length of the sides is really important in the pressing of the album. And also I think that what Hawkwind have done here is to go into the studio and play an hour-long live set that Dick Taylor, who is producing it, and he of the Pretty Things, he's then sliced this up to make tracks out of. And I totally get the impression that, yes, Paranoia is supposed to be one track, but he's had to split it in order to fit it on the album this way. The speeding down of the track at the end is interesting, because my main way of listening to this album is on vinyl. And on vinyl, there is a natural break between the last track of side one and the first track of side two. It's like in the theatre, it's like end of act one, beginning of act two. And in that sense, this kind of speeding down, it kind of works. It's not that it doesn't work, it's arbitrary, but it's perfectly fine. On the couple of occasions where I've streamed this in my headphones when I've been walking down the road, that's when it's weird, because the speed ramps down and then the track begins for no real reason. And I think that's a big difference. I can now think about that with other albums that have this similar transition to the end of side one and then something that comes in with a punch on side two. And that doesn't happen when you stream. So I think definitely the streaming era hasn't been kind to the end of Paranoia Part One.
I still think it's a little bit of a cheap trick, even on vinyl, personally, but I guess that's up to them. If they wanted to do that, then that's a decision that they've made, but I'm still not massively a fan of it, even though that is a personal decision.
Yeah, I guess in 1970, you probably got a group of people experimenting in the studio and just trying things out as well. There's probably a little bit of that to it.
I wonder why they even have part one. I would be interested to know why they felt that 1 minute of music was desperately important to the album.
Yeah, no, interesting. I've no idea, to be honest. I do know that on side two, we start off with Paranoia Part Two,
which I like more. When I listened to this, I wrote Jaws if directed by John Carpenter ? That was the vibe I was getting from Paranoia Part 2.
Which is a movie we all want to see, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just got that kind of like dun 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 vibe to it. And I thought, did they just rescore the Jaws tracks? But then I did a bit of Googling and found out that Jaws doesn't come out for another 5 years, so it's possible that Hawkwind were musical visionaries, and I'm not giving them enough credit for that.
I like to think that there's an interview out there by John Williams, who did score Jaws, saying, well, I was listening to the first Hawkwind album, John Williams would then be in a very prestigious list of people, including John Lydon, as those who have been influenced by Hawkwind. I think that's entirely where John Williams belongs.
Influence all the Johns, that is Hawkwind's main plan, I think, at this point.
So Paranoia Part 2 then gives way to Seeing It As You Really Are.
Seeing It As You Really Are is, for me, a little bit of a return to form, especially, again, on my first listen. I was thinking that the return to theatrical sound design is nice. I feel like, again, it's another long atmospheric intro, so I guess, like, they're doing this an awful lot. Not that I mind it at this point, because I feel like this is building to something where I feel like the Paranoias kind of are doing it for doing its sake, but this one makes you a little bit more pensive. It adds a little bit more interest to it because you know it's going to break into an actual track. I know this is a technical gripe, but the fact that they hard pan the guitar solo into the right speaker made it very hard for me to hear the mix, because the very first time I listened to this, I was listening to it on headphones, and I just have an old DJ habit where I tend to listen to music one headphone on my ear and one headphone off my other ear so I can listen to the room. And I thought that this track really wasn't going anywhere for a long time before I switched ears and then realized that there was a whole guitar solo I'd missed and I had to listen to the track all over again. So it's one of those things where maybe in the 70s it was more of a thing. I know that stereo was still pretty fresh in the 70s. I remember my dad telling me how Whole Lot of Love blew his mind when it was on stereo. But the fact this is so hard panned, it makes it a little bit more annoying than anything. But again, I'm not really going to beat up on it that much because it's the 70s.
Again, I think this is something that I only really experience when streaming this track, basically, and therefore listening to it over headphones. Basically been playing it, as I say, on vinyl through the hi-fi, so I hadn't really experienced that hard panning. And yes, I find it quite annoying, the hard panning. I have a box set reissued Beatles albums, and the first few of those do the same thing, and a track will start with the drums just in one ear, and I'm instantly wondering if I've lost the Bluetooth connection in the other headphone, and then the bass kicks in the other ear. And yeah, I think I would prefer not to have the hard panning. I think now, in an era when you have people doing 5.1 Dolby remixes and now Atmos remixes, you become used to hearing different sounds in a spectrum, but there, I think a lot of care is taken in where they are in the space and how they move and how it's done with a lot of subtlety and a lot of nuance. When it's a 4 or 5 piece band and one whole instrument is just in one ear only, I find that quite tricky. Although the guitar solo itself is really good. It's Hugh Lloyd Langton, who, as I say, goes on to do a lot of amazing things with Hawkwind about 10 years down the line after this. But yeah, I find the hard panning a distraction, and I prefer to listen to it over the speakers in the room so that it blends better to me.
Agreed. Even so, just to carry on with the production conversation a little bit longer, is that I actually like this track. I like that it brings in so many brass instruments. It has an almost Sgt. Pepper-y vibe for me. It feels a bit more fantastical. Again, it feels a bit more interesting. But for me, all the things they do to this track exacerbates the feeling that it wasn't recorded amazingly well. It does feel like it was recorded in a garage or something with very few microphones, one of them a lot closer to the drum kit than I was expecting. And the sound, even with the digital remaster that I was listening to online, was quite muddy, and the sounds aren't as separated in the mix as much as I thought they would. So the whole thing feels a little bit more soupy than I was expecting. And I feel like I can pick stuff out, and it's not a deal breaker at that point. I was just more surprised, which again adds to this fact that it feels like a live album more than a studio album. Like, if you'd have told me this was a bootleg of an album that they played live, I would be ready to believe you 100%.
Yeah, it's pretty astute, because it's not far wrong. It wasn't uncommon at that point for bands, particularly making their early albums, to go into the studio and basically play their live set in the studio and have it recorded. And that's definitely what happens here. Black Sabbath did the same thing with their first album. It was recorded in like 2 days because the producer had seen them live and just wanted to recreate that. And there are very few overdubs and very little production done. I get that impression that that's happening here as well. And I actually quite like that garagey, that DIY feel to this. It resonates for me because this is definitely a band being very progressive and experimenting, but learning all the time. Other bands who became like the prog giants, Yes, King Crimson, Pink Floyd, or early Genesis, the bands that you really think of as these kind of prog giants, were full of virtuoso musicians, absolutely brilliant musicians, you know, keyboard wizards, genius guitarists, incredible drummers, playing in different time signatures, all limbs doing different things at the same time. and there's a lot of technicality, whereas to me this is more a lot of feel and a lot of atmosphere and people experimenting and learning about what they're doing and just recording the results of that straight to the album and learning as they go. And I find that kind of attractive. I think it's also why Hawkwind were not really lumped in with those kind of music giants when punk hit. And it was, you know, down with Pink Floyd and down with Yes and all this kind of thing. There was no adverse reaction to Hawkwind at that point. I think because of this almost punk ethos, the DIY nature of putting all this together with a lack of these kind of classically trained virtuoso musicians. I think that's a signature part of the sound, and they definitely get better at that as these studio recordings take place over the next few years. So we come out of Sing It As You Really Are, and then we're back in kind of shuffly bluesy territory again as we end the album with Mirror of Illusion.
Which feels more like a return to Hurry on Sundown that they're going to get to, which then finishes the parenthesis of the more accessible music that is corralling the wayward, crazy soundscapes in between them in this strange experimental sandwich that the album seems to be going for. I do like the dissonant intro of this. Again, there's a little bit of that stereo panning, which I can take or leave, but the drums are amazingly on point on this, and actually really cemented for me the point that they are a very percussive band. I think they spent a little more time recording those or getting the recording of that right more than anything. It certainly can overpower a lot of the tracks, but in a way which I feel like is designed to do. So I can roll with it. I do enjoy a good percussive track. And the vocals are back, which is something which is always nice. Although for me, I don't know why, but I do feel like the vocals sound a bit Eric Idle for my liking on this track compared to Hurry on Sundown. I feel like at some point they're going to just say, always look on the bright side of life. I'm not sure if it's just me who hears that, but there's just some kind of twang on it, which I find very difficult to get out of my brain. But yeah, it's a suitable ending. I think I would almost be inclined to switch Mirror of Illusion to Hurry on Sundown over, so you end, because Hurry on Sundown has a very climactic feel of when it ends and just kind of fades into nothing. I would rather have that come to a climactic conclusion and have Mirror of Illusion at the beginning, but I don't get to decide which side of the parenthesis goes on which side of the album. But if I was, then that's probably what I would do.
It's interesting. I'd never really thought of swapping them round. I do think that Mirror of Illusion almost pays off on Hurry on Sundown. If you have to put Hurry on Sundown first, then it makes complete sense to put Mirror of Illusion last, as you say, almost bookending the album. Hurry on Sundown would stand out even more than it does if it was there completely on its own.
It'd be like if a band like Sun suddenly put the Macarena halfway through their set. No one would understand why the hell that's there.
Exactly. And I think Mirror of Illusion rather pays that off. I quite like the vocal melody in Mirror of Illusion. It's still not, as I say, it's not really what I was after from Hawkwind. But I certainly don't mind it. I don't find either that or Hurry on Sundown particularly offensive, to be honest. They're just kind of, you know, jaunty tracks that you can hum while you're walking down the road. But that's not really what I tend to want from Hawkwind. So that closes it out. So, Matt, when you started with this album and your hot take was entirely confusing, the bait and switch, over repeated listens as you've settled into this album and got used to the various transitions and the weirdness and the rather eclectic changes of pace, how do you feel about it now?
I think on balance that on repeat listenings, this album is more interesting than I gave it credit for the first time. I think it does make an error by going from Hurry on Sundown to The Reason Is. For me as a listener, I think that if it's your first track on your first album and you're a new band, if the first track you put on there does not reflect the rest of the album, it's potentially dangerous. I think they could lose some fans and they could annoy some people. They certainly annoyed me until I felt like I had to listen to it again because we were doing a podcast on it. I felt like if I wasn't as invested in this album as we had to be to talk about it, I probably wouldn't have listened to it again and I would have had a less favourable idea of the band. But this reminds me of a situation I found in a more contemporary setting with the first Gorillaz album, where they had a radio edit of one of their singles called 19-2000 by an artist called Soulchild. And that track is very upbeat, very fun, very funky. It was like summertime. I thought it was cool. I bought the album without even then thinking about it, and then put the album on at home, and the actual 19-2000 track is a discordant, dubby, much slower, weird as heck song. And that made me feel very annoyed by the album, and I probably didn't listen to it again for a few weeks until I calmed down and listened to it properly. And then once I got into it, I realised what the Gorillaz were doing, and then I actually now really like that album and really like the band. And so I tried to apply that thinking to this, and looking at it from not being deep into the album and actually hovering over it and looking at everything it is, it does feel like a band that is trying to have something which is commercially friendly to make their record label executives happy, but is also trying to push in another direction. And listening to it over many times, I think that Be Yourself is probably the best example of all of this actually coming together and working. So it's got some of the interesting harmonic pedigree that they obviously have from being able to produce something like Hurry on Sundown, but it also has enough experimental weirdness in it with the long solos, with the effects and all that kind of stuff to be different, but feel like you're being taken in a direction that I'm interested to see where they go. So I don't think for me a lot of their experimental stuff works for this album. Again, it could be that they're a victim of having to be an album at all. I don't particularly enjoy the Paranoias. I'll probably never listen to those again. But the things like Be Yourself for me is the track which made me reconsider my first thought about this album and has now actually endeared me to it a lot more and sees it as an interesting inflection point from a band which obviously has somewhere they want to be, has something they want to say, but is actually fighting against its medium rather than embracing it like most other bands would.
That's fair. You now see it as it really is, Matt. For me, it's been interesting for me because when I first had this album and I didn't connect with it and it was confusing, and that meant that whenever I thought of this album, I just remembered that I hadn't really connected with it and it didn't really get much of another chance. And then for this, obviously, we played it over and over and over and over, and I played it more times in the last 10 days than I ever have, which is going to do one of two things. Either you're just going to be heartily sick of it, or you're going to grow into it and find things to like and make some kind of connection. And that's really what's happened. But particularly with tracks like Seeing As You Really Are, Be Yourself, The Reason Is, those tracks, I get those now because we've seen so much weird experimental music that actually I can find this pretty easy to get on with and really quite like it. And I can see this album actually coming out every now and again for a spin. It'll never be one of my absolute favourites, but it's certainly been interesting to reconnect with it. I still don't really connect with Hurry on Sundown or Mirror of Illusion. Apologies to all of you out there for whom that is a favourite track. Doesn't quite do it for me. I'd feel that they're on there in order to be able to have something for people to play on the radio, which I suspect you can't really do with The Reason Is back in 1970, the pop pickers of the age.
I do think that's true, but also I'm glad that Hurry on Sundown now isn't what the whole album is, because it's fine, but there's plenty of bands out there doing absolutely fine 70s style music in that way. I have a 7-inch collection, which I love playing at house parties, which is all this kind of music. And if I find Hurry on Sundown as a 7-inch, I would totally put it into my collection and spin that out of a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young record or into like a Young Man Blue record or something like that. And it would keep the party going for another 5 minutes, but I don't think it would turn any heads and anyone wonder what's going on or who was that. So the fact that they do have it, but then move out of it, even though in an album format is jarring, I do like the fact that Be Yourself is more indicative of where the album goes. Because otherwise, I do think that they would have been a perfectly fine one-album band. I mean, it's not actually, that's not the track that makes it interesting. It is actually everything else that they're doing. It almost feels like a demo. You know, like nowadays, if you're a band, you'd put a couple of Rode microphones in a garage, you'd play everything you've got, and you'd email it to as many A&R people as possible. It almost feels like someone just like took that and went, cool, that'll be an album. Print, perfect, done, get it out there. You know, it has that almost feel of something demo-y. And again, depending on your point of view, you can either feel that's a bit lazy and unprofessional, or you can feel it's exciting and embryonic. And I feel like I started at one end of that, and actually I'm much more on the other side now.
So we're putting together a master playlist of the tracks that really stand out to you from these albums as we go, as a first-time listener to these albums. when we were first chatting about this, it sounded as if it was going to be Harry on Sundown, but actually it sounds to me like you've ended up with Be Yourself. Would that be right?
I've gone through a transformation. I think the first time I listened to this, I thought Hurry on Sundown was the only song on the album. Now I feel like Be Yourself is an interesting sonic artifact that makes me excited and interested to see where Hawkwind go as a band. The short answer is yes. Be Yourself is the track which I will be putting on our collective playlist.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to that. And that playlist will come out in 3 or 4 episodes' time when we've got enough tracks to make up a playlist. Now, talking about what Hawkwind are going to become leads us to the final section of this episode 1, which is a statement that Hawkwind made on their advertising, which is Hawkwind is space rock. So let's dive into that.
When you told me that Hawkwind came out and declared themselves as space rock, I was kind of intrigued because I like a band that gives themselves any kind of mission, because it means that you feel more invested as a listener. You feel like it's going to be more than a one album thing. It gives you something to really get your teeth into and kind of set your mind into. So I was excited about that. At the end of this album, I'm not 100% sure I know exactly what space rock is. All I know is that it's a lot more percussive than I thought it was going to be. The idea of space made it sound like it was going to be a lot more just like ethereal and soundscapey. I don't not like that, but I'm just surprised. Maybe that's more the rock in space rock. But also I feel like I hope that Be Yourself is more where space rock goes rather than anything else on this album, if we're assuming that this album is a departure point for space rock.
Yeah, this feels quite unique to me, the band very much owning the space that it's in. Usually in these cases, I think that a label is attached to a band by the media, who need like a nice little description that they can package up and stamp on a band. So Black Sabbath didn't set out to be heavy metal. I suspect Yes didn't think, well, we'll be a prog band. These are labels that get applied by other people to kind of put you in a little box that's comfortable. As Hawkwind have decided to create and sustain their own box and call it something. And that's really interesting to me in them taking ownership of that. It also feels to me, in what you're talking about, not quite being entirely sure of what space rock is at this end of this album, other than it's what Hawkwind decided is because there's an interesting liner note that suggests that this is a concept that really took shape during the recording of the album. Now, I've had this album for so many years but never read this. I suspect that this liner note is well known to Hawkwind fandom, but I only read it in the last couple of weeks while we were preparing for this. And it says this: "This is the beginning. By now we will be past this album. We started out trying to freak people. Now we are trying to levitate their minds in a nice way, without acid, and ultimately a completely audio-visual thing, using a complex of electronics, lights, and environmental experiences." That's a really interesting thing to put on an album that you've just released. It suggests very much to me that they didn't have this strong concept going in and recording this, but during the recording process, they've worked this out and now they know where they're going. But that feel about right to you?
Yeah, I always like it when a band assumes that everyone is on acid. That's my favourite thing that I take from this.
Well, I mean, in a nice way, without acid is quite funny coming from Hawkwind. But, you know,
I mean, if someone's going to try and blow my mind in a nice way, then I'm much more predisposed to them than any other way they tried to do it. So this is fine. I'm also now in a state where most things are legal, so maybe I'll try and take advantage of that while I listen and just go against Hawkwind's directions. I'm not sure. But to answer the question, I think them saying they'd be on this album gives me some faith, because I would argue that it's not even necessarily an album. It is just a collection of thoughts, which is cool. And the fact that they have used this to say this is a departure point and everyone has to start somewhere. Again, I think I complained to you the first time I heard this and you gave me that liner note. And again, it did help change my feeling of how this album is to be listened to. It's an album which doesn't want you to listen to it like you do other albums. And so if you're willing to go with them on that, you do start to get more into where they are or where you think they're going to go. So it is a very demanding album in that way. And again, I don't know whether or not there are people that go, oh, Hawkwind, those guys, ugh, because they require a lot of input from the listener. You know, they're not a background listening band, but that's also good. I consider myself a very active listener anyway, so having this on, even the tracks that I don't like, I can find lots of reasons to not like it because I'm listening to it a lot, if you see what I mean. So I do think that them having this ambition to say that the next thing they'll do will not be like this is interesting, and it makes me feel like they are playing a long game. And again, a band which has a long game in it and is not necessarily worried about the fact that this album has to sell a million copies, otherwise they'll never make the next one, is also kind of refreshing when you think about the music industry today. The fact that they can be like, yeah, we'll put this out, it's a collection of weird stuff, but we're past this, but we want to put it out there, is an interesting introduction when we talk about the fact that most people would normally talk about the first work of their favourite bands being the most interesting. I almost feel like this band is going to be the reverse.
Yeah, the phrase, "this is the beginning, by now we would pass this album," suggests to me that if you'd bumped into a member of this band after this album was released and said, "hey, I've got your album, that's cool," they would have responded, "you wait for the next one. It's all about what's coming." And that's really fresh and exciting. And a good place then to wrap this up. I will just end by saying that we are at Hawkbinge on Twitter and at Hawkbinge on Instagram as well.
And if anyone wants to talk to us in a longer format, we are emailable at podcast@hawkbinge.space.
And it would be great to hear from you if you've listened to this album yourselves before this, or if you listen to it now. Tell us how badly you think we've got this wrong. We're always open to that. There are a lot of opinions out there. It's actually really interesting looking at other people's opinions of this album. I'd just like to refer to a book. We said we would refer to one or two other things. We've kind of placed this album in rather a confusing space. And a book called Hawkwind Fans Worldwide Facebook Top 40 Albums by Elric Newby. And what he did was to poll a very large Hawkwind fan group on Facebook to produce a chart of their favourite albums. This album actually comes in at number 15 if you take out the compilations and live albums, which is about halfway. And halfway suggests to me that there are a lot of people who really love this album and a lot of people who really don't give it much time for it to end up smack bang in the middle of your collective. So we'd love to hear what your take was.
I also think it would be interesting to see how we feel about this album a few albums from now, because I feel I've gone on a little bit of a journey with it where I would be inclined to put it closer to the bottom, but now, based on everything and the long thoughts that we've had about this, it'll be interesting to see where it actually ends up.
Yep, very much so. So yes, it's time for us to put this album to bed and think about the next one. This has been our beginning, and by now we will be past this podcast. So join us, if you will, next time as we go in search of space.